So we'll do a little bit of Parsha first, and then we'll get into some halacha, Be'ezrat Hashem. So as far as the Parsha is concerned, it's a chiddush if I even remember what Parsha it is at this point in time, but okay, we'll go with it. Chazal tell us that B'sha'a she'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asos l'mishkan, Miyad Amar Moshe Yisrael v'yichuli truma. Hayom Moshe osu b'mishkan v'yilatzen Yisrael omrim efshel ha'shchina shara al-yidei ben Amram. That at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to make the Mishkan, so Moshe said to Klal Yisrael v'yichuli truma, let's take up a collection, and Moshe would make the Mishkan, and the Litzen Yisrael said, come on, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be zocha that there's going to be a mishkan al yadav, not shaykh that there will be a mishkan al yaday Moshe Rabbeinu. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shisha chadashim haya osik b'mishkan, for 6 months he was osik in the mishkan, ushlosha chadashim asuhu, and for 3 months he was making it, ushlosha chadashim kafluhu, and for 3 months he was folding it. Aval became no yemalitzin achrav omrim harenasa loa yemosha omer sheyishu shchinasa etzleinu, and still the malitzin were saying, okay, now it's done. But didn't he say that there's going to be ashras hashchina? Hakadosh Baruch Hu neskavin lahamin hamishkan bechodesh shenolad bo Yitzchak Avinu, and Hakadosh Baruch Hu was delaying in ashras hashchina for the month that Yitzchak Avinu was born. That he dafka wanted it to be in the month that Yitzchak Avinu was born. Lo aselik shigiu osa chodesh amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. Hakadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, "Biyom haChodesh Rishon takimas haMishkan osa shah amar ruach kodesh talmud asiv se sheker osam shemlitzim achar Moshe." That now those people who were mocking Moshe, who were making fun of him, they're going to be silenced because now there's going to be ashras hashchina. So a few questions, three, because it's always three. If Hakadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Mishkan put up in Nisan, why would he see to it that the work would be completed 3 months earlier, and they would have to fold it up and put it away for 3 months, totally untouched? It was clearly finished so quickly in a miraculous fashion. If you've ever been involved in any sort of construction project, or have ever watched a shul being built, like I am for the last 2 years, two doors from me, you will know that nothing happens quickly. Everything happens in at least twice the amount of time that it's supposed to happen. The fact that a construction project, you know, came in under budget and on schedule means that it's either being run by our president, or that it's, you know, that it's a miracle. So this whole thing is a miracle to begin with. But for what? What do you need a miracle to hurry up and to rush the Mishkan if it wasn't going to be used anyway? It was going to be sitting in storage for 3 months. So there must have been some lesson to the unnecessary miracle. Furthermore, the emphasis on Yitzchak is a bit odd. Of all the people to choose, why would the Mishkan be completed dafka in the month of Yitzchak's birth? That Yitzchak somehow represents the Mishkan. Why not the month of the birth of any of the other Avos? And furthermore, the birth of Yitzchak, is that really the most critical event that occurred in Chodesh Nisan? You know, historically, we had some pretty good things happen in Chodesh Nisan. When I say Chodesh Nisan, major events of Chodesh Nisan, probably birth of Yitzchak is not the first thing that comes to mind. You know, we have a little holiday coming up that celebrates another pretty important event that occurred during Chodesh Nisan. So why dafka the birth of Yitzchak? So the Yisod might be as follows. The Mishkan served many functions and roles. It's a miniature universe. It's a blueprint for Hilchos Shabbos. I actually just got a letter yesterday. How often do you get letters? You know, you never get letters anymore. A letter came with a return envelope, stamped envelope. I have it right here. And you know, I was assuming that when I was going to open the letter, it was going to say, this is what I need money for. And I opened it up, and it was just a question about what the deeper connection is between Shabbos and the Mishkan, and return envelope so I could write back a letter to the person who asked the question about what the deeper connection is. So if any of you know anything about the deeper connection beyond that we learn the Melachos of Shabbos from the Melachos of the Mishkan, you know, please feel free to share it, and I'll give credit to you when I write back. To this fellow. Anyway, so So yeah, the Mishkan serves as that. It's a blueprint for Olchus Shabbos. It's a place to have this intimate meeting with the Ribono Shel Olam. It's a place to achieve kapara. It's all of these things. But perhaps more than anything else, what the Mishkan served as is a mechaper for the Chet HaEgel. It's something that serves as a mechaper, something that could be a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. The Egel Azov was very awful on many, many levels. It revealed a flaw that we were already suffering, which was obviously a very shallow level of emuna. It was a public chilul Hashem in the highest caliber, and it was an avera whose timing and proximity to Kabbalah Satorah, to divine revelation at Har Sinai is mind boggling. That we can go from there to there so quickly is just, it's absolutely something that we cannot wrap our minds around. But one element that gets lost in the Chet HaEgel, and I think this is particularly an important element to keep in mind at a time like this, is our complete lack of ability to keep our cool under pressure. I remember there's a sports writer that I read an article. He wrote an article about, he was a Red Sox fan, and the Red Sox were playing the Yankees in a big series. This is before the Red Sox won the World Series. This goes back years. And he said that he was watching with his wife. He was watching the game with his wife. And he said to his wife, "Oh, at least Derek Jeter looks nervous." And his wife said, "He does?" He's like, "No, I'm kidding. Derek Jeter never looks nervous." Meaning there are certain people that have the ability when there's a big game, when there's something, lahavdil, when there's something big, there's something important, when the pressure is on, they dafka get into a zone at that point. They react in a better way. They become a better version of themselves, and they don't freak out and totally lose control. And that is something that we lacked in a very major way at the Chet HaEgel. We've seen it. We've seen people who, frankly, aren't even that impressive, but under pressure somehow, people were never really, I probably shouldn't get into politics too much, but there have been political leaders, let's say, when 9/11 happened. You guys are pretty young, but when 9/11 happened, there were mayors and presidents and whatever who maybe didn't always show, appear to be the brightest people and the sharpest people, but then the pressure came and they just had it under control in an uncontrollable situation, and they were really calming leaders at that time. And that's what it's really it was the great failure of the Chet HaEgel among everything else. It all happened because we lost it. We didn't see Moshe Rabbeinu. We didn't know what to do. We were freaking out, and we just lost it. When you shrink under pressure, you fail miserably, and otherwise intelligent people make very unintelligent choices. So why do some people shrink under pressure and others thrive under pressure? So it seems that there are two basic skills that those who thrive under pressure have, and those who shrink under pressure tend not to have. The first is that those who thrive under pressure tend to exhibit a certain level of patience in their decision-making, even under pressurized situations. They don't react immediately. They still think, even when it seems that there's no time to think, instead of rushing and making hasty and irrational decisions. And one of the great gifts of age, actually, is the ability to remain patient even under pressure, even when things are very tough, to remain even keeled, to not be totally rattled and totally shaken by every event or by every criticism or by anything that seems, just to take the time to make the right decision. I can tell you I was involved in a lot of discussions about a lot of very weighty decisions over the past week, probably none more than last Thursday night, On Thursday, Rabbanim in the community were already, in my community in the Five Towns area, were already getting emails from Balabatim, you know, Bergen County shut down, you're a bunch of rotzchim, you're a bunch of murderers if you keep your shul open, and because people always find the nicest way to say things, and there was, and on the other hand, there were people saying, how could you take away tefillah b'tzibur in a time like this? What are you, crazy? This is the only thing that can save us. How could you, you know, and there were some people that immediately sent out, immediately, as soon as they got that first email, sent out emails to their shuls. This is what we're going to do. And then they had to change their mind five times, because the Das Torah changed their mind five times, and they did. So as I was talking to my shul president on Thursday, and from one of my chaverim who mentioned to me, you know, maybe let's not make any decisions yet. You know, let's wait, because things are changing so quickly in this environment. Let's just wait and see what happens. Don't make the decision until we have to make the decision. And it was very good advice to do that, because as it turned out, the picture on Friday morning was very, very different than the picture on Thursday night. A certain amount of patience in a decision-making process to make sure that the decision is the right decision. A second, and these aren't the only two things, but a second quality that maybe separates the person who's cool under pressure from the one who's not, is that the one who's cool under pressure forgets about him or herself and how he or she is going to look as an individual. And they completely become one with the task and the goal at hand. The person who buckles under pressure is concerned about shedding a spotlight on themselves and envisions everyone else shrinking away in the background. That they see it as the weight of the world is on their shoulders and it's all about them, and they lose the general sense of klal. A person who's only going to view things from his own perspective in highly pressurized situations, particularly in situations that affect the entire klal, who's afraid of looking like the one who's not so frum, or he's afraid of, you know, what are people going to say about this, and how is this going to affect my reputation or whatever. And such a person is very, very likely to make the wrong decisions, to freak out, like we said, and to end up doing something that ultimately is actually going to ruin his own reputation. A person who thinks about the klal first, and only really, thinks about klal Yisrael, thinks about all the people that are affected by what's going on, and says, okay, let's take a klaliistic view of what's going on. Let's see what's best for the Jewish people. And, you know, I have to tell you, you know, over the years, I've had you know, a pretty good relationship with Rabbi Billet from the Young Israel of Woodmere. And I've gotten to learn a lot from him, and we've worked closely together with the VAD and other things, but I've never seen such leadership like I have in the last week and a half from him. His total bittle of self, just to make sure that the klal is safe, is really, it's what pushed all of the rest of us to make the right decisions when we had to. And to the extent that we didn't make the right decisions, it was because we weren't listening to him. It's because we weren't really listening to, and essentially what he was saying is, forget about me, forget about, I mean, he didn't say it in so many words, but forget about me, forget about, you know, what's to my benefit. He was the first one to say, already a week ago, or a week and a half ago, we're not doing Mechiras Chametz in person. I don't know if you know what that means for him. The man has a shul where he does Mechiras Chametz for, I don't know, 1,200 people. I don't know if you guys are aware, but if you're going to be Shul Rabbanan, there is a minhag that people give the rabbi some money when they do Mechiras Chametz. What that minhag is based on is a good topic for a different time. There is some basis for the minhag, but there's such a minhag. For someone who has 1,200 people in his shul, it's a salary. It's an annual salary for a regular person, the amount of money that he probably gets from Mechiras Chametz. And he said, forget about it. We can't do it. We can't risk doing a Kabbalah's Kinyan in front of people. And that kind of thinking, that kind of decision-making, before the world even recognized everything, before the world even saw, and not the world, before our world, the Jewish world, saw just how quickly this was going to happen and how dangerous this could become, you know, that's a certain kind of thinking that an effective leader has to have. And based on that, maybe we can understand why Hashem wanted the Mishkan to be mechaper for the behavior of the people that led to the Chedah Egel, more than for the Chedah Egel itself, and that could answer our questions. They were under enormous pressure. They panicked. They worried about what they were going to do without their leader, without their guide, without Moshe Rabbeinu, and they became fearful for themselves. So they made a hasty decision. If they would have thought through their decision, if they would have just slowed down a bit, they never would have had to make a decision in the first place. I mean, it's like a classic example of just wait. Don't make a decision until you have to. Take some time. And if they would have taken that time, Moshe Rabbeinu would have showed up. He would have been there. And the whole thing could have been avoided. But it's because they felt that they had to do something now. Sometimes the best decision is to see how things play out. And Hashem determined that the kapara would have to come through a great deal of patience. That here's what you're going to do. You're going to complete a Mishkan in miraculous time. And then you're going to sit for 3 months and just wait and do nothing and see how things play out. Just let it sit. You're going to be itching. People are going to begin to murmur. What kind of leader is Moshe Rabbeinu? Where's this Mishkan that he promised us? And you're just going to have to sit and you're going to have to wait. And we're not going to act in haste. And the people didn't think about the overall mission of Klal Yisrael when they violated the Chedah Egel. They thought about their own immediate needs for a spiritual intermediary, for this spiritual gratification that they were looking for. And there's a great deal of that going on right now. There are people that are adayom, that are violating the overwhelming rabbinic instructions, and not only rabbinic instructions, but obviously health instructions from our government, and are getting together with minyanim in the five towns. Someone sent me a picture of a minyan going on in the five towns. It happens to be the rabbi of that shul thinks that as long as the food store is open, my shul is going to be open. Okay, it's an unusual situation, but there's still people doing this. Why are they doing this? What do they not realize? How dangerous this disease is? Do they not realize that it can spread so quickly? They're doing it because they have this need to scratch this spiritual itch, and they think this is the only way that they can scratch the spiritual itch. But it's a stunning lack of perspective, a failure to see the community of the immediate area, the community of Klal Yisrael, and the community of humanity. It's an absolute stunning lack of perspective. So we had this problem with the Chedah Egel, that we felt we needed the spiritual intermediary. So what do? So we right away scratch our spiritual itch. And as a kapara, we have to learn the meaning of self-sacrifice. We have to learn the meaning of, you know what, things aren't always going to feel good. According to the Ramban, the entire idea of the Karbanos is that we should view ourselves as if we are the ones that are being sacrificed. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that it's best for the Mishkan to be erected in the month of the birth of the man who didn't just envision himself on the Mizbeach, who actually went on the Mizbeach. A person who was willing to actually give himself up because that was Ratzon Hashem. And this is, we've spoken about this before. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks for different things from us at different times. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking for this kind of Mesiras Nefesh, for the Mesiras Nefesh of being able to cut ourselves off from our normal avenues of Kedusha, from our normal avenues of connecting to him, and to connect to him in these other ways, in these ways that involve much less direct and obvious connection. And when we want to be mechaper for the Chedah Egel, we want to understand what that means. And it's at times of crisis that you see when a person has learned these lessons, that a person has to be someone who has patience, but also has a very, very broad vision and is able to look beyond their own Dalet Amos. And as future leaders, I think that's what my quote was on the OU magazine, right? Future leaders. So as future leaders. By the way, I don't know where those quotes came from. I don't know if I ever said them or not, but they sound good. So as future leaders of Klal Yisrael, these are things to work on. You know, these are things that certainly people who are a little bit older than you and have been out in the field for a couple of decades, like me and my chaverim, we continue to work on ourselves in these areas to improve decision making by not making rash decisions, by thinking things out, by having a dibuk chaverim, by discussing with other people, making sure that we're not missing any angles, making sure that we're not missing any information, and by having working on a sense of responsibility for the klal, a sense of understanding that, you know, it's a lesson that I was privileged to learn very, very early on, because I had the privilege to work for Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky for all those years. And like every time a difficult decision would come up, every time something came up in the meeting, he would stop and he would say, remember, we don't work for the board of Halb, you don't work for me, you work for the Ribono Shel Olam. Let's keep that in mind as we make these decisions. And that was always the guiding light. You work for the Ribono Shel Olam. What does the Ribono Shel Olam want for his children? What kinds of decisions can we make for the Ribono Shel Olam's children? And that's the ultimate kapara for the Chet Egel. So if the Mishkan is no longer available to us, we have a unique opportunity for kapara for the Chet Egel, not for the Avera itself, but for that which caused the Avera in the first place. And our ability to be mechaper is largely going to depend on our ability to handle a very highly pressurized, less than ideal, and somewhat desperate situation that many of us find ourselves in, and to really turn it into something that can become an empowering moment. To become, we just had in today's Daf Yomi, that there are those people that are ohev esat tzaros, that love tzaros. And the Marsha explains, no one loves tzaros, but what it means is, no, they do love tzaros, because the tzaros that they experienced enable them to grow. That a person has to experience tzaros sometimes in order to be pushed. And when they're being pushed, they can find out what they're made of, and they can find out just what they can become. And that's really our challenge for however long it's going to last. But that's our challenge, to see what we can become, to see what we're made of, and what we can grow into, Ezras Hashem. Okay.
Rabbi.